This is Phil Farron. And I am driving home. Episode 400 and 500. 548. We're going to be at 550 pretty soon. And when we get to 11 years worth of podcasts, it will be 572. So we're over halfway to that now. I think. Anyways, been a good week. It's Thursday today. I'm not planning on coming in tomorrow. Have a big day tomorrow. The neurologist, after he talked to me and concluded that my little neurological event that we had last June, on June the 7th, was probably what we thought it was, which is global transient amnesia, which there's no long-term side effects to it. It just happens occasionally to people. He concluded that's probably what it was, but he would like me to do an echocardiogram and an ultrasound anyways to look at the veins in my neck and upper chest and make sure blood flow is good and all that sort of thing. So we're doing that tomorrow. And hopefully it will give me a clean bill of health. Because it's going to set me back over $1,000. So it's like, really? Do we really need to do this? But that's fine. That's what health savings accounts are for. And health savings accounts are tax deductible. So, you know, it's fine. But we'll get both of those things done tomorrow. My wife and I are getting ready to, here in a few weeks, do a little vacationing, and I decided after hearing about the TSA pre-check stuff, I thought, you know what, we should just do that TSA pre-check thing, because it's $85 for 5 years, and you don't have to take off your shoes anymore, and you don't have to do this, and you go on the special line. This seems like a good deal. So my beloved took care of hers last Tuesday, day before yesterday. I'm doing the visit tomorrow. Unfortunately, they said, yeah, it'll be, 10 days to 2 weeks before you get the stuff. Oh, rats. So it's going to be interesting to see whether the stuff actually comes in on time. If it does, great. If it doesn't, that's fine. Maybe she can go through the pre-check line and I'll go through the normal line. We'll get it figured out. But it'll be interesting to see where we end up with that. So I have to do that tomorrow as well. You have to fill out the little form, and then you have to go down in person, and they fingerprint you, and bring the stuff down, and I think you have to have your birth certificate and a driver's license. You have to do all that stuff, and so anyway, so we'll get that done tomorrow as well. I have an extra responsibility tonight that I didn't realize I was going to have. My son-in-law called me and he said, so how much do you love me? I said, I love you lots and lots. You are my favorite son-in-law. You, when it comes to son-in-laws, you are right at the top of the list. No one is more beloved as my son-in-law than you. So, as it turns out, they had planned a party for the staff tonight. Some of the staff couldn't make it. That was, if you heard that little voice, that's my watch. Every once in a while, it just decides it's going to try to listen to me because I say something similar to the activation line. Anyways, so they decided to have this party. They got it all planned out for the staff of the church. My wife can't make it because she's getting ready for choir retreat. The music ministers can't make it because they're over helping with a convention, but their kids are going to be coming out for it, combined with my grandkids. And the rest of the staff is all going to be coming out. They've ordered food. Everything's great. They're all set up for this. And then it turns out that Alan accidentally double booked himself. So he and my daughter are supposed to be going to a BGMC banquet tonight, right when the staff party is supposed to be going on. So I'm hosting. I have become the new host. So I'll get home, and at 6 o'clock, I've got to wander down to their house and make sure that the four kiddos don't tear each other up and have to be there for when the food comes. And then I just got to kind of wrangle everybody and, you know, let them have some fellowship and a little talking, a little food. But I tell you what, I walked out of my major client today, and it is a gorgeous evening. I mean, it's just spectacular. So it's going to be lovely to be outside, and it'll be a good day. It'll be a good day. Anyways, so writing. Some of the beta copies came in yesterday. More are coming in, so I've started distributing books on book 11. Hopefully the rest of the books will come in the next couple of days, and at that point I'll be able to send out the rest of the beta copies. I'm sorry, I got buzzed. One moment. I'm at a stoplight. I'm not driving and looking at my phone at the same time. Yeah, okay. Anyways, hopefully the rest of them are going to get in soon so that I can send those out to everyone. I thought the cover turned out good. I kind of went a little bit overboard on my decals. I ordered a decal for my phone, which I normally do. I also went ahead and ordered a decal for my computer. I haven't done that before, but we'll give this a try, see if it's, yeah, I don't know. I'll see. That may be a bit pretentious, but I ordered one anyways. We'll see. So that's good. Started book 12. Book 12. Halfway. Book 12. On the way to 24, I started book 12 this week. I mostly know where I'm going for this book. I'm not quite sure where we're going to land, but I have in mind where we're supposed to be going, and I think I'm off to a good start, and so we'll just see what happens. So all is well there. I did find out this week as well that there is in fact a holiday in January that I will be celebrating. Part of Uncle Sam Day, I was actually down at a restaurant that I frequent when I do these things, and there was a new waitress there. She had waited on us during International Dog Day, and she bustled over, and she was convinced that I just dressed up in this dog costume, you know, from time to time. And I was like, nope, it's International Dog Day. Oh, come on, but this isn't one of your favorite outfits or something. I said, no, it's International Dog Day. So I wasn't sure she was convinced, but when I showed up on Uncle Sam Day dressed as Uncle Sam, then when she walked by me at one point, she said, so you just like dressing up for celebrations? I said, yes, absolutely. I am a celebrant of obscure holidays. So I discovered another obscure holiday that I am going to celebrate come January, and that is January 22nd, which happens to be National Polka Dot Day. So I'm working on a National Polka Dot Day costume along with some of the other costumes I'm working on. And as it turns out, Disney has attempted to co-opt the National Polka Dot Day. Apparently back in 2016, a Minnie Mouse got some kind of a star on some something, And Minnie Mouse got her star on National Polka Dot Day. And so Disney now wants it to not only be National Polka Dot Day, Disney wants it as well to be Minnie Mouse Day. So they're celebrated in conjunction with that. And so I'm going to try to do something where we kind of meld those two together. So it will be fun. It will be fun. There might be bloomers involved. So, oh man. I had breakfast this morning with a buddy. And one of the managers, she came by and we were talking about the next holiday. And we got to talking about why I do this. And we got talking about the fact that women, we say men are visually stimulated, but they get visually stimulated towards lust. Women are visually stimulated too, but typically they get stimulated towards joy. And she kind of thought, and she said, yeah. And she wasn't sure. And I said, look, puppies, babies, kittens. She was like, yeah, I can see that. I said, so if you figure out how to get in that stream and you figure out how to invoke that, you know, you can bring joy to people. And so we were talking about that. My buddy, he's listened to all this, and I'm not sure he's buying all this. And then I started describing Crazy Paisley Day and what the object of Crazy Paisley Day is, that you try to wear as many types of paisley as possible, preferably all clashing. And she gets this big grin on her face and she starts laughing. And I tell her, you know, you want to look like you found a time machine and you went back to the 60s to the Haight-Ash period. She starts laughing. I say, you fell into a clothing bin. That's what you look like. And I said, see, that's it right there. That's it. That's the reaction we're looking for. And I said, I got all kinds of paisley stuff, including, I said, I've got Daisy Duke shorts that are paisley. And she lit up with this huge grin and just put her head back and smiled. I said, there it is. There it is right there. So it's just fun. I said, so that's, you know, she said, so that's why you do this. I said, it's one of the major reasons I do this. I said, we need more smiles right now. We need more joy. You know, and she said, boy, we really do. I said, it's just getting weird, and we just need to just have more joy. So it'll be fun. It'll be fun. I am working on the ugly Christmas sweater costume as well. That's like the second week of December. And it's I've told people this already, just because I'm trying to judge response. I'm doing it. It's a Christmas story themed ugly Christmas sweater outfit. And so I'm taking pieces from a Christmas story and I'm doing homages to them in the outfit. So this is going to be fun. It'll be fun. I know funny. This will be funny. I may not be able to walk into my major client wearing this outfit, but it's going to be funny. I'll go to Walmart, for sure. Anyways, so this week, I had mentioned last week that I had come across this really fascinating YouTube video called 5 of the World's Most Dangerous Chemicals. And I was reading through this and I was like, what in the world? Oh, this falls in the category of, it is the glory of God to hide a thing and the glory of kings to seek it out. Because this stuff is just astonishing. So this was from a YouTube channel called SciShow, S-C-I-S-H-O-W, SciShow. And it was really interesting. So they opened it up talking about in 1939 in Germany, in a secret bunker on the German-Polish border, Nazi agents were overseeing the recently discovered chemical they had codenamed Substance N. It boiled when they exposed it to air. It exploded when it touched water. It was lethal when inhaled, and when it decomposed, it spit out deadly hydrofluoric acid. When loaded into a flamethrower and ignited, it could burn at temperatures of over 2,400 degrees Celsius. The plan was to arm troops with Substance N and use it to melt Allied bunkers into hot porridge. But then, after studying it for a while, even the Nazi soldiers were like, whoa. And experiments with Substance N were discontinued because the Nazis were convinced that it was too dangerous to work with. The Nazis decided. So anyways, they made about, the plan was, originally the Nazis were going to produce about 90 tons of the stuff every month. But after they had some problems, then they only made about 30 tons of it through the whole war. And the official name of this stuff is chlorine trifluoride. And it is the most vigorous fluorinating agent known to humanity. So these agents, they have a tendency to rip other molecules apart and replace their hydrogen atoms with fluorine, and the result is what chemists call a violent exothermic reaction. In this case, a fluorine fire, and it's much more dangerous than to handle even than fluorine gas. So he says, which I don't know this, but apparently anyone with a degree in chemistry could tell you is not a sentence you get to say very often. It's also a better oxidizer than other oxygen oxidizers are, compounds that steal these chemicals. Okay, so that means that chlorine trifluoride is so good at burning stuff that it can burn stuff that people wouldn't think was flammable, like bricks, or asbestos, or things that have already burned oxidizers and are used to ignite rocket fuel, etc., etc., etc. The problem with this stuff is, you know, storing it. Okay, so in the 1950s, the first time U.S. scientists tried to ship chlorine trifluoride in bulk, the steel tank cracked and a full ton of it spilled out and burned so hot that the chemical ate through an entire concrete floor and a meter of dirt underneath. Yeah. So, and gravel. One eyewitness described the spill only by saying, quote, the concrete was on fire, end quote. Yeah, this is not stuff you want to mess with. So apparently this chemical is still manufactured, and it's used in the semiconductor industry in small amounts to clean equipment. You know, the good news is you can store it in a steel drum if you're careful, because as soon as you put it inside, it forms a crust, and that crust turns non-reactive. So that's one of the chemicals. So there's another chemical, and non-reacted is not a word that you would use to describe. Let's see, I'm not going to get this right. It's called azidoxide azide. We'll just call it AA. It is the most explosive compound ever created. This little twitchy compound is part of a class of chemicals known as high nitrogen energetic materials. And it does what it does because nitrogen just wants to be left alone. A nitrogen atom bonded with another nitrogen atom is one of the most stable molecules on Earth. One moment. Driving down my drive. It's one of the most stable molecules on Earth. Their electrons form an extremely strong triple bond with each other, in which, in nature, which can usually only be broken apart when it's hit by lightning. The strength of the bond means that when two nitrogen atoms snap together, they release a tremendous amount of energy. So if you look at a molecule of AA, you can see how it gets its bond. It has 14 nitrogen atoms, and because of the way the molecule was structured, none of them are in a triple bond. So you this gives you 14 opportunities. Instead, all these nitrogen atoms are stuck together, loosely bound energy state, and are dying to move to more stable, to a lower energy state, which means releasing a lot of pent-up energy in the process. As a result, AA is both highly reactive and a blank of an explosive. Yeah, so how sensitive is this stuff? Well, it's actually hard to say on the YouTube video because it's too sensitive to even measure how sensitive it is. Getting my mail, one moment. They said a team of German chemists created it in 2000. Oh, big package of something. That's my shirt. Hard to say because it's too sensitive even to measure how sensitive it is. A team of, just a second, more mail. And let me check down here real quick. Oh, more stuff. Yeah, this is all stuff that's coming in for my A Christmas Story. Dun-dun-dun. Yep. Okay. A team of German scientists created it in 2010 with the help of the U.S. Army in an effort to develop more energetic compounds. And their first report on their discovery, they said, and I quote, "The sensitivity of C2N14 is beyond our capabilities of measurement. Even the smallest possible loadings in shock and friction tests led to explosive decomposition." So they had a list of what could cause it to explode. This list is as follows: moving it, touching it, dispersing it in a solution, leaving it undisturbed on a glass plate, exposing it to a bright light, exposing it to X-rays, putting it in a spectrometer, turning on the spectrometer, and absolutely nothing. They had it in a shockproof explosive case in a dark climate-controlled room, and it blew up. Oh, man. Scientists, what will they come up with next? I think somebody said something mean about it somewhere, and it was like, beep, the lead scientist on the team that synthesized it called it a very exciting discovery. Whew. Okay, so then there's also dimethyl cadmium. This is an organometallic compound, which means it has a molecule in which carbon has bonded with a metal. In this case, that metal is cadmium. Pretty nasty customer all of its own. So far, we've talked about chemicals that explode or cover everything in unquenchable fire. Dimethyl cadmium does that too, but that is not what makes it so dangerous. It is, in all likelihood, gram for gram, the most toxic chemical in the world. It has both acute and chronic effects, which means it will kill you now and later. It was first prepared by a pioneer of metal organic chemistry named Erich Krauss from Germany. It was 1917. To give you a sense of how Krauss rolled. He died in his lab at the age of 37 after accidentally inhaling a bunch of chlorine. But before that happened, he managed to report his discovery of dimethylcadmium. When you breathe it in, it is instantly absorbed into your bloodstream, where the bloodstream serves as a kind of chemical chauffeur for toxic compounds of cadmium to travel all through your body. Because it's so effective at exploiting your bloodstream, it quickly affects your most blood-infused organs like lungs and your kidneys and liver, creating compounds that rip electrons off the atoms of your cells. But if you manage to survive your first few hours after dimethylcadmium exposure, don't get your hopes up. It's an extreme carcinogenic, so it will take you down with cancer just to spite you. Oh, he said the stuff is so potent that as an airborne vapor, a few millionths of a gram per cubic meter of air meets the legal safety limits. So the question is, if you spill it, how are you going to clean it up? Well, you can't use water because it reacts with water and produces heat and lots of hydrogen gas, which is flammable. So yeah, it explodes. Etc., etc. Okay, so the next chemical is thioacetone. Won't explode, doesn't start fires, doesn't give you cancer. So it's more like, according to this guy, cute little fluffy bunny. If that cute little fluffy bunny had the most ungodly stink you can imagine. This is the world's smelliest compound. You know, it uses the same types of pairings as a skunk spray, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But you can smell a drop of this substance almost instantly from half a kilometer away. Half a kilometer away, one drop of the substance, you can smell it. How in the world? They said in the 1960s, a vial of the stuff fell off a shelf in a research lab. People were checking their cookies in buildings 200 meters away. But the greatest example of its strength comes from a German city, Freiburg, where in 1889, chemists at a soap factory were reportedly working on a larger molecule known as trithioacetone, which is used as a flavoring and fragrance. But when they broke it apart into thioacetone, workers started falling ill. Spontaneous outbreaks of vomiting were reported in the surrounding neighborhoods. It led to an evacuation of the entire city. Okay, and then lastly, is the strongest corrosive agent in the world. Fluoroantimonic acid. Okay, because what dangerous list of chemicals, they said in the article, would be complete without a super acid? They said what makes an acid, its ability to donate a proton to another molecule nearby. And a proton is just a hydrogen atom that's lost its electron. This process is called protonation, and an acid's strength is determined by how willing it is to give up a proton. A weak acid, acetic acid, for example, which is just another undiluted form of vinegar, will drag its feet about protonating, while other molecules will sit there and do nothing. But a strong acid, like sulfuric acid, will punch that protein into the air like a beach ball, et cetera, et cetera. So, well, fluoroantimonic acid is 10 quadrillion times stronger than sulfuric acid. So, what's exciting is that fluorine really likes to bond with calcium. So once the acid tears through, if you got this stuff on you, once the acid tears through the fatty organic tissues of your skin and muscles, the fluorine will burn through your bones. The only way to store it is in Teflon containers. And we don't actually know a lot about this acid because it's so hard to do experiments with. You can't put it in a syringe or on a slide because it eats through the glass like cotton candy. You can't put it under a fume hood. It'll eat the fume hood. All you could do is just, like, look at it, ideally from very far away. It's just astonishing. It's astonishing that these things exist in the world. And it's astonishing that they are discoverable by human beings. It really, it's astonishing. It's just astonishing. So, you know, it is the glory of God to hide a thing and the glory of kings to seek it out. It's really interesting stuff. I tell you the other thing that's really, really interesting, sometime I'm going to do a podcast on it, is venom, snake venom. The destruction that snake venom can wreak on the human body. And it's just a protein. It's just a protein. And yet, really amazing stuff. Anyways, I am home. This is Phil Ferrand. I have made it home. I'm in my garage. Have a great weekend.